This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's roundup. No special announcements or anything, so let's jump right in. First up, Mr. Mario 2011 recently released a guide that shows you how to use a software exploit called Endgame to softmod an original Xbox without the use of an original game, which is very important because while that was easy to accomplish over the last 20 years, it's very common to find an Xbox with a dead DVD drive. So then you would have to either put in an actual mod chip or try some other repairs on the DVD drive. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that's doable, but something like this is actually much, much easier. And while I've been out of the Xbox modding scene for a very long time, I was pretty deep in it when it was a mainstream console, because when you would run Xbox Media Center, which required a soft mod, it was actually a better media player than almost every other media player available on the market back then. So XBMC, in fact, is what evolved into Kodi, which most of us at least know what that is, I would assume. So I've been kind of doing this for a while, and it's very cool to see that you just need some more basic tools available and you don't actually need a working DVD drive. So please check out the video if you're interested. Also, the Console Mods Wiki has a written guide as well. That's always great to reference that while you're watching a video. In fact, it's always good to have two sources the first time you do something like this. And I believe a few other people have put out endgame guides. But to be honest, I'm just a massive fan of Mr. Mario 2011's. His videos have really helped me a ton with PlayStation 3 and custom firmware. And, you know, if you've got your PlayStation or Xbox or whatever the way you want it, and you don't really do anything for a couple years, you almost have to go back and relearn everything. So I think I've rewatched the same Mr. Mario 2011 video many times for that stuff. And when I saw that he had done a video on the original Xbox and Endgame, I just thought, perfect. Here's a great excuse to talk about it a little bit and share this very helpful tool with anybody who might need it. Next up, Console 5 is selling a full Game Gear refurbishment kit from McWill that is basically an entire internals replacement. It is a brand new motherboard, and you just have to transplant the chips from your Game Gear over to it. It comes with an IPS screen and an HDMI out, all in one $200 kit. So while this isn't exactly an easy thing to do, depending on the condition of your Game Gear and your skill set, it might actually be quicker than trying to recap a very damaged Game Gear that has leaky and gross caps all over it. You know, if you've never done chip replacements before, I would say it's much harder, but if this is the type of stuff you do on a regular basis, you'd probably spend less time transplanting these chips than you would trying to do a full cleanup of it. So Samson 7.1 did a full review of it here and a complete overview of what to expect, and it looks absolutely awesome. It also looks like it is an upgrade over the original McWill kit, which is, you know, it's not an insult. It's just the original kit was almost 10 years ago now, I think. So of course there's going to be some updates and everything, but this looks very cool. I would love to see Tito from Macho Nacho Productions do a full installation and testing video on it to see how it compares to Matisse's motherboard and see how the HDMI output works. But for now, I think Samson 7.1 absolutely did an awesome job. So if you're a fan of the Game Gear and yours is dying, especially if yours has some bad leaky caps, you're really going to want to consider a motherboard replacement. And this might be the exact one that you're looking for, depending on if you need HDMI out as well. So definitely check out Samson's post if you want any more info. And I'm also very curious to see what this is like, because while I'm not really a handheld gamer, I definitely prefer just sitting back in a couch and playing on a big TV. I had a Game Gear when I was a kid, and it kind of still holds a special place in my heart. So I would love to see how this performs and kind of just overall what it's like. So hopefully we'll see a decent full video deep dive review of it. But for now, just check out Samson's post. It's awesome. Next up, QWERTYMOTO's Super Nintendo digital audio mods are back in stock, and there are versions that cover every version of the Super Nintendo and Super Famicom. So there are two different audio chips, the SDSP and the SAPU, and this will now absolutely work with both of them. You just have to check in the drop-down menu which one you're going to be installing it into. And this is, if you're using an original non-junior or mini SNES, this could be a no-cut mod, because you could, if you would like to, just unbolt the RF, unbolt and desolder the three pins from the RF jack and put this in its place, which means you could have a completely no-cut digital audio mod. And this will both work with optical, Toslink, and coax digital, so both types of digital. You just need to pick the cable that you want to go along with it, which, of course, I've linked to all of that for anybody interested. And I'm a big fan of these things. The only downside, which has nothing to do with QWERTYmoto, it is just the way the SNES works, this will not work with MSU1 audio or Super Game Boy games, whether it's original Super Game Boy or done through the FX pack, because those generate their audio on the cartridge, and then that audio is mixed through the Super Nintendo on the analog side. So while this mod pulls the audio on the digital side before it's converted to analog, there would be no way to mix those together digitally. You could probably do it externally, but it would cost a lot and it would be a giant pain. That's not who this mod is for. However, you know, analog audio still works perfectly fine, and every other audio that's not Super Game Boy or MSU1 audio would work perfect through the FX pack or any ROM card as well. So that's the only thing to note. Also, SNES digital audio is weird. Sometimes you're going to run into compatibility issues with receivers, and you could try a resampler, you could try a bunch of other stuff, but this is just one of those things where, kind of like using line multipliers like the OSSC, you have to just understand that the SNES is weird, and it might not be perfectly compatible with your modern equipment, but it probably will be. So I still wholeheartedly stand behind it. I think it is an awesome mod for people that want that crystal clear, no buzz audio that you get from a digital audio mod. And, you know, check out the links. The price is right. It's about $40. So just check out the links for more info. And if you want to hear more from QWERTYmoto, check out an interview we did. Just watch the video or search any podcast app for Retro RGB QWERTYmoto and see what he's been up to. Next up, JT Studio is now selling an injection molded cartridge shell replacement for Sega Saturn cartridges. I have one right here, and it is very high quality. It is not at all flimsy plastic, and it even has a notch in the top of it that is not a hole, it's notched, so that if you're using it as a RAM cart replacement, it still looks fine, but if you need it as a micro SD card slot for the Saru cart, then you could just use a razor blade or something to pop that little piece right out. So it absolutely awesome choice. At the moment, it's confirmed to work with all original Saturn RAM cartridges, as well as most of the Saru carts, but I'm not sure if it would work with an Action Replay, and I'm not sure if it would work with the Red cart. Saturn fans already know what I'm talking about. You would absolutely have to notch out another hole for the Switch if you're using a Red cart. But if anybody wants to buy one of these and wants to test them, please let us know, because I would also ask JNT Studio to update their page, because it would be pretty cool to know if they fit more cartridges. And I think they'd obviously sell more if there were more options. Now, yes, of course, there is one model of the Saturn RAM cart that is already transparent, but a lot aren't. So this is pretty cool if you want to update the look, or if you're one of the many people that had a cartridge stepped on or broken over the years, here's a very good quality replacement. But I do think the majority of people are going to be using these with the Saru cart. Now, we haven't talked a lot about that on Retro RGB yet because of the accidental AliExpressing of it. So let me back up for a moment. The Saru cart is an open source project, and while I'm going to be oversimplifying and skipping over some of the details here, basically what happened is the developer put the design up on GitHub for people to test before a solid final revision was released, and AliExpress sellers just took it as if it was done and flooded the market with a bunch of them, but they don't work right, which was a horribly disrespectful misrepresentation of the developer's awesome work. So now the market's starting to hit with the latest version that is easily flashable with the English firmware update and does work up to spec. But there's still a lot of bad ones out there using rebadged and repurposed chips. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you should be very wary of them that have nothing to do with the Saru project itself. So I'm talking to the Shiro crew. Hopefully we could find one reliable seller, or maybe J&T Studio could even work with a couple of other people to get the best version available and maybe even bundle them with these, because I would happily pay just a few bucks more to know that I'm actually getting a quality build that's up to spec. The Saru project is something that really needs its own dedicated video on. I hope the experts at the Shiro crew would be willing to do something like that, but the short version is it's a backup RAM cart, it's a RAM extension cart. You could also load games from it, and while you won't be able to load the whole library, the games that do load, load really quickly. So this is a pretty big deal, and it could end up being the go-to homebrew solution for everything Saturn related, I guess including original discs too, because of the RAM functionality and everything else. So if you already have a Saru cart, or if you're planning on buying one, then maybe just pick up one of these. They're 20 bucks plus shipping. They're really high quality, and it'll be a great companion for it. And if not, you know, maybe hang out for a while, and hopefully we could get everybody working together, and maybe J&T Studio could sell the full kit with a quality Saru cart in there as well. But very, very cool for Saturn fans, and you know, thanks to J&T Studio for sending me these to check out. I think you all know who I'm going to be sending these to. You'll see these again in other people's videos. Tito from Macho Nacho Productions recently uploaded an awesome video showcasing a brand new product called the ETH to GC, or ETH to GC, which is essentially a homebrew version of the broadband adapter for the GameCube designed by Extremes and WebHDX. The most important thing about this, in my humble opinion here, is that the sidecar version is $35 and the light version is $15. That is like over $100 cheaper than the original one sell for on eBay, which I linked to with an affiliate link, because of course, just in case you still want one of those originals for whatever reason. But this is just absolutely awesome. There's a few things that you're going to want to note about this. The first is that it's not going to work with original discs. The way this project works, even though Swiss is an incredibly handy tool for even running original games, this is going to have to be loaded via a ROM of some method. In this post, I put links to a bunch of other Tito's videos that show how to do that, including mod chips, M2 loader, whatever. But loading games on a GameCube is so easy now. And to be honest, while I'm a huge fan of original games, I can't tell you how often I run into a situation where I have the original game because it's important to me, but I never actually plug it in because of the convenience of ROM cards or just how awesome it is to use Swiss for the millions of things you could use it for on the GameCube. So that's something that I just wanted to put out there, but I don't think most people would be bothered by it. Next, the main difference between the light and the sidecar is that the sidecar version has the cable run out the back and allows for an easy fit with the Game Boy Player adapter, whereas you would have to kind of mod the light version a little bit and change a component, kind of trim it up in order for the Game Boy Player hardware to fit. And also the cable sticks out the side. It's just cheaper to manufacture. So also, the light version is completely open source. So if you want to build your own, or unfortunately, I'm sure that means we're going to see even cheaper, crappy, low-quality versions coming out of that one notorious company in AliExpress. But it's something that Extremes and WebHDX wanted to make sure we had access to. So if you're at a place, or if you live in a place where getting buying these adapters would cost more in shipping than the adapter, you could probably just make your own. And the last point to note is that the hardware required for this is not going to be fast enough to run RetroNAS so that you could load games over the Ethernet cable. You can do this with the broadband adapter, and it works really well, the original official Nintendo broadband adapter. And they're looking to do a pro version of the ETH to GC that has more expensive hardware that can handle this. It just wasn't their focus right now, and they don't want to just buy some expensive chipset that would end up costing you the same as a broadband adapter. So what would the point of that be? And I think it was the right move. Get the project out to people, let people use it, and then hopefully they could swing around someday to get the faster version for ROM loading over the network as well. But overall, this is great. If you want to be able to play any of the multiplayer games, whether it's via LAN or some of the online games that are available, this is the solution I would suggest, without a doubt. Tito went into detail, as always, showcasing all of these things and how it works, as well as a bunch more cool stuff. So definitely check out Tito's video if you're interested in this. WebHDX has them for sale. And of course, please consider supporting Extremes on Patreon, because Extremes' stuff is always free for everybody to use. So I just always want to make sure I stress that point. These things can't really happen without us supporting those devs. So if you're in the position to, and you use Swiss, Game Boy Interface, you know, the ETH to GC, please consider signing up as well, because I would love to see more projects like this. And we got to just show the devs some love if we want that to keep happening. So buy from the original creators when possible, support when possible, and watch Tito's video, because it's awesome. Now it's time for this week's Mr. Updates, care of Lou from Lou's Retro Source. As usual, I'm going to skim through these and give my thoughts whenever I feel like it. But if you want more details and visual examples, please check out Lou's video. First up, the team behind the Amiga Vision Collection just released a pack for the 486 core with a goal to consolize the 486 DOS experience on the Mr. platform and make gaming on the PC core as easy as any other console core that's supported. I think that is an amazing goal, because maybe you're new to all of this DOS stuff and it's kind of a steep learning curve if you've never done any of it before, or maybe you're old and lazy like me and you feel like you've paid your dues and you don't need to deal with this anymore. So thank you very much for setting this up. Lou has more info in it in the video, and I believe at least one other person did like an overview video of it, which Lou linked to. So definitely check out that if you want more info, but I'll be testing it at some point soon because that sounds awesome. Next up, Ubryoji released a new boot ROM for the PlayStation core that's themed after Metal Gear Solid. I love these boot ROMs. Thanks, Ubryoji, for doing all of this stuff. I just think it adds a small but really cool aesthetic to it all when you're booting this stuff. So thank you for that. Next up, Hotegu has been working on a framework that would allow cores to more accurately recreate audio filters from arcade hardware. That framework is now stable, so Hotegu is going to move back to core development with the audio work being handed off to another team member. So that is awesome news. Anybody who's ever liked arcade sounds and music is going to appreciate that, whether you realize you do or not. Just the accuracy of this stuff is awesome, and it's very cool to see Hotegu putting some focus in that. I think the entire MD4EA team are all just fist pumping and cheering for that one, because that's pretty cool. Next up, SRG320 has made the Sega Saturn core official. So just use whatever updater you use and you could now get it. 98.8% of the US library is now playable. It's not perfect, and SRG320 is, of course, still going to be working on it, but now it's just something that you can just download and start using. And I think it's absolutely awesome. I'm such a fan of SRG320, and it's very cool to see the Saturn up and running on the Mister. Next up, the Tap 2 project. There's a fork of it that has different loading and boot screens. Lou showed all the examples, so if you're into that, definitely just check out Lou's video for this. But it's basically another edition of Tap 2, and I want to do my own video on this at some point in the future, because I thought it was very cool before I saw it for myself, and once I started using it, the whole tactile experience of everything changed. And with stuff like this loading screen, I think it's very, very cool, and kind of just makes it feel like a much more polished overall user experience, if you will. You know, I'm a fan of Mr. exactly as it is, but stuff like this is a pretty neat upgrade. So hopefully I could do a video at some point to highlight it. Next up, there is now the Pi MMS cartridge back in stock for the Mr. Multisystem, which is, if you want to upgrade music playback from original computer cores, that's something that you could use, and it's all back in stock and plug and play. And lastly, the Mr. main and some cores have already been starting to get updated to the new framework that supports the 24-bit digital output of the new board that Sorg had released. One vendor had already sent me, and it is en route, their version of that. So I should be able to test it, see how it performs against the rest, and kind of just give an overview. And I'd love to do another follow-up video that kind of just breaks things down as, here's the type of kit you should get depending on your needs, and have it be more seller agnostic and just say, here's just Mr. kits in general, and here's how you should choose for your setup, and here's also how you should choose if this is your need now, but you might need this later, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll follow up with that at some point in the future, but it's really cool to see even more awesome hardware choices for the Mr. So as usual, thank you so much to Lou for doing all of this for us. There's no way I could keep up with all of this stuff, and I'm so happy that Lou is able to do all this and keep us all in the loop. So don't forget to subscribe to Lou's channel as well. Next up is a firmware update for the Mega Switch HD, which is an HDMI kit that's available to be installed in original Model 1 Genesis consoles and is a true hybrid emulation solution, the same way the RGB Blaster and the 7800 GD is, in that it pulls the digital signals from the main chip, but then generates its own video digitally on a built-in FPGA. So you're still absolutely using the built-in CPU and RAM and audio circuit from a Genesis. You're really just replacing the very noisy video circuit. And if you're going to direct HDMI, I absolutely loved it. I was super impressed by it. And this update allows for more color accuracy and a ton more options. The one warning, if you could even call it that, is after flashing this firmware, which is super easy, just hold reset while powering on and plug it into your computer via a USB cable. Can't get much easier than that. But after doing so, it defaults to limited range RGB color. So you're just going to need to know if your capture card or display could accept that, or if you should be setting it manually to full range color. And that's exactly what I did. I went to take before and after pictures to just to show all of the my fellow nerds that were interested in the differences, and it defaulted to limited. So I fired up my capture card. I have all my settings set for full range. I'm going, oh man, that's ugly. And then I went, wait, I bet you it's full and limited. And that's all it was. So it's a very, very quick solution. You just go into the menu by holding start and up, and then set it to set limited range color to off. And then that's it. It persists even after powering off and unplugging the AC adapter. So you just have to set it once. Also, if you set one of the video settings wrong and you ruin the video output, you could just reset it to default blindly. I don't know what I did, but I ended up with an all-white screen, and I had to message the developer, Stanislav, and be like, I broke it. What do I do? And all you do is you power on the Genesis, you know, you wait for it to power up, and then you hold start and up as if you were loading the menu. You just do it blind because you're not going to get any video output. And then you hit... what is it? Up, A, up, up, A. And that's it. What you're essentially doing is walking through the menu blind, going through the settings to hit load default. And that's all it was. The fix took about 10 seconds. So don't feel at all nervous messing with these settings, because the worst thing that could happen is exactly what I just said. If that happens, if you get totally screwed up video, just unplug the power in the HDMI cable, plug just the power back in, and walk through that blind like I just explained. All of the info is in the post too if you want it. So yeah, I think this is awesome. I love that there's more options, and I love that it's very easy to reset when people like me start messing with it a little too much. If you want to see this thing more in action, and you also want to see my preferred version of how to tap the audio that leaves the independent headphone jack controls, check out the live stream I did with it. I really liked it, and I just think this is a very cool option for anybody that's a fan of the original Genesis. And the only thing I think it's missing, which I think the developer's looking into, is direct output. So that way, if you want to use it on like a BVM and your flat panel, you could either just use a cheap DAC so you can get super high quality Genesis video output, or if you have a RetroTINK 4K and you want it to do the scaling the same way that Mister's Direct Video would. So hopefully that mode can be added. I'm not sure if there's a technical limitation or not, but no pressure on the developer. If he gets around to it, awesome. If not, I still think it's great exactly as is, and it's definitely worth checking out if you're a big fan of the Genesis. Before I go, I just wanted to swing back to the Punch-Out NES to SNES port by the developer Infidelity. I still haven't tried it because I'm not really good at that game, but I did guest on one of Ron the Handlebar Gamer's live streams, and he is good at the game. So it was very, very cool to be able to see him walk through each of the opponents on first the NES version and then the SNES version to see the differences. The biggest difference by far is that in order for this ROM conversion to work, the HUD had to be moved to the bottom so that Infidelity could use the top black area above the crowd as the blanking space for the transferring tiles to the VRAM. I had to reread my post to remember. As you can tell, I'm not a programmer, but it was cool. I liked it. I thought it was really neat, but moving the HUD was definitely a striking change. So I'm not sure if this is going to be for everybody, but I just want to politely remind everybody that this was much more of an experiment to see if he was even able to port the MMC2 mapper to the SNES, which he was. So while this wouldn't be the one I would use as an example of all of the amazing work, it's still absolutely worth trying if you're a fan of the game. And it does reduce flicker and some slowdown and stuff like that. So I would absolutely check it out if you're a Punch-Out fan. And if not, or if you're just curious, maybe flip through the live stream I did with Ron. I was uncharacteristically exhausted. So if my my enthusiasm was waning, my enthusiasm, whew, sharp today, aren't I? If my enthusiasm was waning, it was only because I was exhausted, not excited to be, it's not that I wasn't excited to be hanging out with my friend Ron or playing an awesome port. So as always, thank you so much to the developer Infidelity for working on these. I think they're a very big deal. They are the only way I will play original Metroid for the rest of my life. And I'm pretty sure the rest of those games would be the only way I would want to enjoy them as well, just because it's essentially the NES version, but without the flicker and slowdown and stuff like that. And they have MSU1 patches for most of them if you're into that. But I just like having it exactly as it was with the original, but less of the slowdown and flicker. So I'm interested to see where the developer goes next. He said he's working on the Konami VRC2 mapper, so we'll see where it goes to. But for now, just check out the stream with Ron and I if you want more info. And you know, thanks again to Ron for having me on and for really going through and absolutely giving it a hardcore playthrough on both versions. Well, that's it for this week. As always, thanks to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to anybody who supports in absolutely any way possible, because it really is you who's keeping all of this stuff going. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next time. This week's roundup is brought to you by Neo Paradigm Entertainment, connecting Southeast Asian influencers with opportunities in the West.